WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Welcome, everybody. Hope you had a good weekend. A pretty good weekend for the failed former President Donald Trump, winning a number of additional primaries. But Nikki Haley finally did get one. Not the most exciting victory. It came in Washington, D.C., but it is at least a victory. And we'll also get an update on the way the delegates are looking. So first and foremost, the big headline, BBC and others reporting, Trump's closing in on this Republican nomination. There doesn't really seem to be anything that's going to get in the way. The BBC refers to it as a string of victories, Missouri, Michigan and Idaho caucuses, making it a clean sweep of the states. Trump says he is, quote, on a rocket to the Republican nomination. And at least theoretically, Trump could secure it this week or next week with the forthcoming Super Tuesday primaries, which we will talk about in a moment. But it was not all Trump over the weekend. Nikki Haley did get a win. And the win is in Washington, D.C., in that Republican primary. Nikki Haley taking that one. That was one of Trump's weakest back in 2016. And that is at least something for her, something for her. She says she will stay in the race at least until Super Tuesday, which is tomorrow. And Donald Trump reacting to this very strongly, which we will get to in a moment. We get an update on the delegate count. Remember that delegates are there are 2,400 delegates available. You have to get half plus one, which is 1,215 total delegates. Trump has 244 and Nikki Haley 43. Now, again, if you just zoom out and you say, hey, someone's got 244 and someone's got 43, that's at least nominally a contest. And you're not wrong. The problem continues to be for Nikki Haley that other than the Washington, D.C. win that she got, which is statistically almost meaningless in the grand scheme of things, she is not on track to win a single additional state on Super Tuesday. And so that is going to be a challenge for her. But again, this is not really a race for Nikki Haley to win on the numbers. It's a race for Nikki Haley to stay in long enough to say, hey, you know what? I'm deserving of the nomination. If something happens to Trump, whether MAGA will want Nikki Haley if something happens to Trump, doesn't seem clear at all that the answer is yes. And then tomorrow, Super Tuesday, I will be live we will be getting results from. Well, in theory, we'll be getting results. There are elections tomorrow in Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and Virginia. That's all tomorrow. And then primaries will continue in the next number of days. So Trump gets multiple additional wins. Nikki gets D.C., no mathematical path to the nomination. And we will see if after tomorrow, Super Tuesday, depending on the results, does Haley end up mathematically eliminated? More on that 48 hours from now. Donald Trump, furious that Nikki Haley defeated him in Washington, D.C. It is not statistically hugely important. It is not going to change the trajectory of Trump in general towards the nomination, which is if he's alive and out of prison, he's going to be the nominee. But Trump, furious that Nikki Haley is even still in this race, he thinks she should have been out long ago, showing loyalty and deference and kissing the ring and the entire thing. He immediately took to Truth Social after these results and said the following, quote, "I purposely stayed away from the D.C. vote because it is the swamp with very few delegates and no upside. Bird brain," meaning Nikki Haley, "bird brain spent all of her time, money and effort there. Over the weekend, we won Missouri, Idaho and Michigan. Big numbers, complete destruction of a very weak opponent." The really big numbers will come on Super Tuesday, also way up on Crooked Joe, and then taking another shot across the bow at Nikki Haley in an immediate second Truth Central post where he said, quote, "Bird brain is a loser, record low performance in virtually every state. DeSantis easily beat her in Iowa for a very distant second place. And then she ran up to the podium before he had a chance to do so and claimed victory. I enjoy watching the bird disavow her pledge to the RNC and her statement that she would never run against President Trump, quote, a great president. Well, she ran, she lied, and she lost big." Let me interpret this for you. Trump sees anything short of getting down on your literal or metaphorical knees and praying at his altar as disloyalty, as inappropriate, and it makes you a bad person, quite frankly. Trump is ultimately going to get what he wants as long as he can stay alive and out of prison. Even in prison, it's not obvious that he won't get the nomination, but we'll deal with that if it comes to be an issue. I doubt it will, at least not before November. But this is ultimately the bottom line epitome of Donald Trump. You're useful to him or you're not useful to him. The concept of friendship, the way you and I might understand it, is just not really a relevant framework for Donald Trump. And so that's what it is. She is now disloyal, and that is what it is. Vice President Kamala Harris gave a legitimately good speech over the weekend about the incredibly weak nature of Republicans claiming to be about freedom, despite not actually being about freedom. You know, the reason that we say it was a genuinely good speech is Kamala Harris is not known in her role as vice president for giving exciting, impassioned speeches. And she also is not known necessarily for taking on the most controversial issues, even within the Democratic Party. She did both during this speech. So let's take a look at this. This was in Selma, Alabama over the weekend. And here is Kamala Harris, the vice president, pointing out that despite being the party claiming freedom is what they are about, Republicans have come after the freedom for women to make decisions for themselves, for educators to make decisions about what's best for the students they are teaching. This is really getting to the heart of this hypocrisy. Take a look.
The fight for freedom, that every person in our nation has a right to be free from the horror of gun violence.
Right.
And yet today, These extremists stand by and refuse to pass reasonable gun safety laws to keep our children and places of worship safe. Freedom. That every person in our nation has a right to be free to love who they love openly and with pride. And yet, just this past year, extremists have passed or proposed hundreds of laws targeting LGBTQ people. Freedom. That every person in our nation has the freedom to learn and acknowledge our country's true and full history. And yet today, extremists pass book bans in this year of our Lord 2024. While they also try to erase, overlook, and rewrite the ugly parts of our past. Fundamental freedoms under assault. The freedom to vote, the freedom from fear, violence, and harm, the freedom to learn, the freedom to control one's own body, and the freedom to just simply be. And understand the profound impact these attacks have on the next generation of our leaders. Just last fall, 15,000 young leaders joined me during my fight for our Freedom's College tour.
So listen, I think that this is a really great idea for a number of different reasons. Number one, corporate media is following the narrative that has been floated by the right. Biden's old. And we need to remember this serves two purposes. Number one, seeing the most vibrant possible version of Kamala Harris will to some degree reassure those who have a concern about Biden's age. That should anything happen to Joe Biden, there is someone ready to take over who understands what it is that is going on with this Republican Party. And also pushing back against this false notion that it is the right that are the ones who defend freedom and support freedom, and it is the left who is against it. Very much not the case at this point in time. Someone wrote the speech for her. We know that, right? That's how it works. But actually going at the idea that if you want freedom, it's not coming from the Republican Party. That's for damn sure. Unless you mean the freedom for corporations to be free of regulations so that they can put out damaging or dangerous products with no recourse or oversight. Right. Like, that's not really the freedom that I want to see as a social democrat. This is a great tactic in terms of Kamala Harris's role, especially to try to get the attention off of the Biden's old stuff, not to mention especially when Trump is falling apart at every single rally, as we will see in a moment. Major news from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has put Donald Trump back on the Colorado primary ballot. We've been waiting for this decision, and we got it this morning. CNBC reports the Supreme Court Monday tossed out a Colorado ruling that barred Trump from appearing on the state's Republican primary ballot. The Colorado Supreme Court, you might recall in December, said Trump can't be on the ballot. He engaged in insurrection. He's not going to be on the ballot. The U.S. Constitution says no person can serve as an officer of the U.S. if you, quote, engaged in insurrection or rebellion after taking an oath of office. Seems pretty clear Trump did that. Two other states, Maine and Illinois, have also blocked Trump from their ballots, but those sanctions are currently on hold. And the Supreme Court made a unanimous decision. A unanimous decision, quote, states have no power under the Constitution to enforce the provision disqualifying people from federal office if they engaged in insurrection, especially the presidency. The ruling said states could disqualify people from holding state offices on those grounds, but not federal. This just broke as we were going, as I came into the studio today. We are going to wait for more legal analysis. But fundamentally, the takeaway for me and the takeaway for you and the takeaway for voters who want to prevent another Trump presidency is as follows. We're not going to defeat him by kicking him off the ballot. We are going to defeat him by voting. And we could be sad about that, or we can be happy, or we can be upset or think the decision was wrong. We are 8 months away from this election. It is an inflection point. It's not like the 2012 election. OK, there is genuinely life altering stuff riding on this one. And we are going to have to beat him by voting. That's what we've learned based on the Supreme Court decision. We will see what cascades from this. But that is where we are. Trump presumably seeing this as a victory. He now gets the pleasure of us defeating him at the ballot box if we all get out there and vote. So we will talk more about this. The news just breaking. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Failed former President Donald Trump's brain melting over the weekend, as bad as we have seen it. The predictions from Dr. John Gartner last week ringing particularly true. It is getting much, much worse. Trump speaking in Greensboro, North Carolina. And now with the knowledge of what Dr. John Gartner pointed out, explained, named and described for us, Trump's cognitive failures are getting scary. Trump, I don't even know how to describe what you're about to see. I have never seen the guy struggle to speak to this degree. We have about a dozen examples just from this weekend now. The acceleration is scary. Here is Trump. I don't know what's happening here.
I heard that Saudi Arabia and Russia will repeat toot.
will repeat toot. Whoa. That's scary stuff. Something is very wrong here.
I heard that Saudi Arabia and Russia will repeat toot.
Trump seemingly white flagging, and it's really not funny. But it's hard not to laugh from the awkwardness of how so horrible it is to see this before our very eyes. Trump unable to say Venezuela, really struggling this on this day. Let's take a look at this one.
Did you just see Maduro, Venezuela? It's unbelievable. Did you just see Maduro, Venezuela? It's unbelievable.
Just bailing, just completely bailing out. Emails pouring in. This may be a form of aphasia caused by fill in the blanks. Right. That's the question. Caused by what? Trump, when he was able to hold the speech together, saying things that are obviously fabricated out of thin air. Here is Trump claiming that 82% of the country agrees the 2020 election was, quote, rigged. I've seen a lot of polls. I've never seen one that said that.
You ever notice that they go after the people that want to find out where the cheating was? And by the way, 82% of the country understands that it was a rigged election, okay? You can't have a country with that. A poll came out, 82%, but they go after the people.
Yeah. Unable to find that poll. Have never seen polls with similar numbers. Seems completely, completely fabricated out of thin air. Scary moment at the Trump rally where a guy apparently had a heart attack and was taken out along with his children. A really scary moment that seemed to further disorient Trump. And then when the QAnon music came on, for large stretches of that portion of the speech, Trump just soaking wet, shaking his head and looking around and muttering to himself while the music plays. We've never, you know, when Trump says there has never been anything like this in American political history, he's right, but for different reasons, I think, than he believes. This is a quote speech. Trump looking around confused, soaking wet while the QAnon plays. Anyway, it's all really, really bad. And then lastly, with regard to, you know, legal opinions, it seems that in this clip, Trump is saying it's OK that he had classified documents stacked around his toilet at Mar-a-Lago. Because there were locks on the toilet, there were locks on the bathroom door. Maybe the toilet was locked too, so Trump wouldn't flush a lot. But there were apparently locks on the bathroom door. So then it's fine to have his documents there. Oh, I'm sorry, not his documents. The documents he stole.
Whereas mine were at the great Mar-a-Lago. I had Secret Service all over the place. I had a locked door. You know, they asked me, could I put another lock? We showed them. I said, here's where they're stored. Take a look. They looked. They said, could you put an extra? We had a good lock there. We had Secret Service. They said, could you put an extra lock in?
Right.
And I said, sure, put an extra lock. They wrote me a letter. Thank you very much. Put an extra lock. And then they raided Mar-a-Lago after that. These are bad people.
So I don't know. Listen, since we know the documents were in the bathroom stacked around his toilet, I guess he's saying he double locked the bathroom, which I think maybe that's Trump's preference anyway, to really make sure that those bathrooms are secure. A wild Greensboro, North Carolina rally, and the deterioration is happening rapidly. Later in the show, we'll look at one more speech Trump gave in Virginia, and he messed up Obama and Biden again, and the crowd went silent because you can tell Trump's not kidding. He loves to say it's a joke when I mess it up. It's obvious he's not kidding. And that's for later in the show. The Greensboro event, cognitively terrifying. By the way, despite being big boy patriots and Americans and all that great stuff, they screwed up both the national anthem and the Pledge of Allegiance at the Trump rallies over the weekend. Here is video from Richmond, Virginia, starting with the Pledge of Allegiance. Couldn't get that right.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic.
Oh, man. I guess that was a MAGA patriot who was doing it. This is real America, folks, apparently. And then the national anthem also getting messed up by the person forgetting the words. Oh, man, they can't do anything right, these people. And they say they're going to fix health care and solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and fix immigration and fix trade and fix education and fix foreign policy. And they can't get anything right. They just there's nothing that they can do right. And what we are also seeing, and this is something I hope that from a national security standpoint, it's not even national security, from a physical security standpoint, I hope is being paid very close attention to. The Trump rally goers and the MAGATs and the whole, you know, the MAGAPotamians, they are much more willing now to say, we'll just get violent if it comes to it, if we don't get our way. We're going to deal with that a little bit later. But let's look at some short interview clips from these rallies over the weekend. At Trump's rallies over the weekend, some of the rally goers were interviewed by this right wing network, Right Side Broadcasting. And a woman at the North Carolina Trump rally was asked, why is it that you love Trump? And her answer is really just a reminder of how disconnected from reality these people are.
Thank you for coming out here. Thank you for, you know, watching Right Side. We appreciate that. But what is it about President Trump that you need back in our society right now?
He's a man with morals. He stands for what he means and he means what he says. And that's exactly what's gotten America into the situation that we're in. People make promises and they don't keep them. That's no good for anybody.
Can you imagine? And this is, you know, the younger, more naive me would have sat here and would have debunked line by line what this woman says. Well, hold on a second. He has the family morals that you say we need, except he's been divorced how many times? Children with how many women, cheating, porn stars, payoffs, the entire thing, making fun of disabled people. Right? I would go through the list. Or when she says he made promises and he kept the promises, I would say he said he'd replace the health care plan with something. He didn't do it. He'd fix the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in one term. He didn't do it. He'd build a wall with Mexico across the entire border that Mexico would pay for. He didn't do it. That's what the old me would have done. The new me. For lack of a better term, or maybe what we're talking about is the more focused me on what do we do in 2024 for the election is these are cult members. You can't talk sense into them either through a combination of undiagnosed mental illness, ignorance, lack of education, or just cultishness, where they are completely indebted in some way to he who leads them, the great orange man. It's not even worth doing the fact checks. It's not even worth confronting the substance head on. It's we need to get around them to win. We need to make them politically irrelevant. Are there hundreds of thousands or maybe even millions of people like this woman? Probably. Yes, probably. Are there enough of us who know this is nuts but don't vote? And if we did, we crush them? Yes. And both sides do the turnout game, right? I mean, when you only get 50 to 65% turnout in a presidential election, either side can win without convincing anyone on issues, but just by convincing them to vote. That's the good news. The opportunity is there. The counterpoint is every time candidates say we're going to win by ramping up turnout dramatically, it doesn't usually happen. Oh, this time around, we're going to win on the backs of the young people who are going to turn out in record numbers if we can just activate 10% more young people who are already on our side. And then it doesn't happen. So upside, downside, see it however you want. The opportunity is we, despite not being able to talk sense into this woman because she's in a cult, we don't need to. That's the upside. The downside is everybody who says we're going to win on turnout often ends up underperforming the explosive turnout that that they expect. So we've got to do it. One more clip. The right wing interviewer from Right Side Broadcasting tries to talk to a guy about what he likes about Trump. And it almost escalates into a fight where the guy says, get that microphone out of my face. And then someone comes in and grabs the mic. It was, you know, there's this inbuilt rage in these people. And it's mostly targeted at the left and at Democrats and at Joe Biden. But these people are furious with everybody. And they'll target it at the right wing interviewer who puts a mic in their face, too.
You do? Tell me three things you love about him.
Yeah. Get that microphone out of my face, buddy. I don't like the microphone shoved in my face.
Okay. All good. All good. Hey, we're glad you're here.
So just the fury and the rage of these people. And by the way, it may have been a Marxist microphone, or the microphone might have been built by Antrifa. We just don't know. We just don't know. But the fury and the rage that drives the MAGA world is just bursting at the seams. And that's what we saw right there. So the speeches from Trump are just gutter trash. The interviews are conducted in the most cultish way. The people being interviewed are barely holding it together. We have a real opportunity here to try to do away with this MAGA scourge or scourge for good. The question is, will we come out in enough numbers to do it? And we'll be tracking that question. Let's take a very quick break. What a program. So much more coming up right after this. I want to take a look at a short clip with you from NBC over the weekend. And Kristen Welker says that Donald Trump allegedly tried to overturn the election. And I think this is a real, real problem. This is revisionist history. This is the exact sort of dangerous stuff that I've said so many times is what we need to get away from. I'll play the clip and then we will discuss.
Mr. Trump's claim that he's immune from criminal prosecution for allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election.
Allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election. This is revisionist history. OK, the right always says there. I'm not saying Kristen Welker is on the right. I don't know her politics, but she said something that plays into the narrative from the right. The right loves to say these left wingers want to revise history. They want to change the story about what happened in our past, and we can't allow them to do that. And blah, 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 blah. When you say Trump allegedly tried to overturn the election, you're suggesting that Trump's efforts are not well documented, that the allegations are without basis. Now, we don't yet know, were Trump's efforts to overturn the election criminal, right? There's a criminal trial right now that's going to presumably adjudicate that. Whether Trump's actions were criminal, we don't yet know in a legal way. But that's a criminal trial. The attempt that Trump made is not a mere allegation. And I don't understand why Kristen Welker or NBC felt it necessary to include that word. You invite a violent mob to disrupt the certification. You demand that Mike Pence refuse to certify the election to, quote, send it back to the states, even though we know from the Eastman memos exactly what the plan was. You get on the phone with Georgia election officials and you say, find me 11,000 votes. Give me a break. You put together slates of fake electors. The list goes on and on and on. And how you land at it's an alleged thing. It is absurd as it is dangerous. Now, I understand that there is a desire from corporate and mainstream media not to be seen as too biased one way or the other. And so what you sometimes see is false balance, neutralizing words used to try to remove what could be called partisanship or whatever. This is a bad example of that. And often when corporate media tries to do this, you're just misinforming people. Trump tried to overturn the election. The question is it criminal? You could say it is allegedly criminal in the sense that Trump was indicted, but it hasn't yet been adjudicated. I'm with you on that. That makes sense. But he allegedly tried to overturn. That is exactly what he did. He did it through dozens of court filings. He did it through pressuring state officials, et cetera. This is the worst of corporate media, and we see it in some other examples that I'll name. We've talked about the false balance debates on climate change, where some corporate media outlet says, hey, let's do a fair, neutral, unbiased interview about climate science. So we'll devote 10 minutes to it. There will be two people, each of whom will get 5 minutes to speak. One will understand and accept the science on climate. And the other will be a whack job outlier whose claims are not based on data and doesn't represent anything approximating even a significant portion of the scientific community. And hey, we're doing the right thing because we're neutral and we're objective and we're unbiased, even though all those words mean different things. And we'll let them have it out 5 minutes each. And we did a good boy because we didn't take a side or whatever. And as I've said before, this would be similar to after a sports game, after a baseball game between the Yankees and the Red Sox. Everybody sees the scoreboard. The scoreboard says Red Sox 6, Yankees 3, totally normal score after such a game, obviously. And then you say, we're going to do 10 minutes on who won. And one person will represent the side that the Red Sox won and one side will represent the Yankees won, and the audience can decide, and we're being unfair and objective and unbiased and all this stuff. It's nonsense. And this is exactly the type of dangerous stuff where, although on the one hand, NBC and Kristen Welker and others are accused of carrying water for the left, which, by the way, I've not seen them do. Then they pull out Trump allegedly tried to overturn the election. No, he tried to overturn it. He failed. It may or may not have been criminal. Dozens of you wrote to me over the weekend, posted to the subreddit, commented on YouTube about a new poll that shows Trump leading Biden by 5. It is a New York Times Siena poll, quite a respectable pollster. And there are a number of different reactions that I want to talk about because some of the debunkers of this poll seem to be getting something wrong. Now, I'm going to admit to you, this is my best interpretation of what we have. And if I'm getting something wrong here, I want to hear from you. So let's start at the very beginning. New York Times Siena poll comes out. And on Biden Haley, it says Haley is leading by 9. On Biden Haley, what's the difference even between these two? Likely voters versus registered voters. Among registered voters, Haley is leading Biden by 10. On Trump Biden, among likely voters, it's Trump plus 4. And among registered voters, it's Trump plus 5. Now, when we see that, we always want to contextualize it in terms of other polls. Is this poll an outlier or not? Well, we have a new YouGov poll, which has Trump plus 4. So Trump plus 4, Trump plus 5, Trump plus 3. That's the ballpark we're operating in right now. So first and foremost, the New York Times poll is not an outlier. Now, let me tell you the problem a lot of people had with it. Many people looked at the sampling of the poll and noticed correctly that rural voters were dramatically oversampled. And the key word here is sampled. In fact, there is an interesting article on the Dash Files Substack called New York Times' Latest Poll is a Pile of Garbage. And so I looked through this, and indeed, they are showing it's Trump 48, Biden 43. And they point out that there are these urbanicity crosstabs that show a dramatic oversampling of rural voters relative to the actual number of rural voters that there are. And people that live in cities based on the different sizes, it doesn't represent. The idea here is they've sampled way too many people who live rurally, and that's what's throwing off these results. Now, we'll link to this article. I encourage you to read through the entire thing. This is really, really important. When I looked through the polling methodology, I saw that there is an oversampling of rural voters, but that is then weighted and adjusted. Every pollster does this. You don't always imagine that the real, just as an example, imagine that the real percentage of rural voters in the United States were 22. We know that 22% of people live rurally. Okay. As you do the poll, through a number of different reasons, you might end up sampling 34% rural voters. So you say, well, hold on, only 22% of the country actually is rural, but we sampled 34%. Okay, so then you change the weighting for the results. It's not the biggest deal in the world. So I think that there's a couple important things to keep in mind here. And this is because a lot of people are saying this poll is bogus due to sampling. The sampling and the weighting of the results are two different things. I have not seen any evidence that the results are weighted with that number of rural voters. If I'm wrong, I want to hear from you. OK, so maybe I'm the one who's misunderstanding, but the sampling and the weighting are two different things. But here's the other thing I think is important to talk about. This poll is well in line with all the other polls that we're seeing. I mean, if this one poll somehow overweighted rural voters, the YouGov poll has Trump plus four. The Reuters Ipsos poll, which is only of all adults, which is not considered to be the most accurate, has Biden and Trump tied, but at 36-36. That means 28% of the electorate is missing. They don't know they're going third party. They're undecided. The New York Times poll, as we just mentioned, has Trump plus four with likely voters and plus five with registered voters. The Forbes Harris X poll with registered voters has Trump plus five in a three-way race and Trump plus four in a two-way race. This is all in line with what we are seeing. Now, there are some better polls for Biden. Like, for example, there's a YouGov Economist poll from 10 days ago, which has it tied. But the key question we have to ask and then come as a takeaway from this is maybe there was oversampling of rural voters in the New York Times poll. Maybe there wasn't. Maybe there was overweighing of rural voters, or maybe there was. OK, but the poll is more or less in line with every poll that we're seeing. A dangerous number of people seem to be either undecided, unsure, or even leaning towards a throwaway vote on a third party candidate. And that's the really scary thing. Joe Biden really may lose to a bunch of whatevers who wanted Trump in 2016. Saw Republicans lose almost everything since then. And they're saying we actually want more. Now, I do want to mention one other thing. Some of these polls, the thing that to me isn't making sense is when you look at the racial preferences. So this isn't the sampling now. This isn't, oh, white people are 78%, but they were sampled at 90%. Now I'm talking about how white, black, Hispanic folks, et cetera, say they are planning to vote. I am very much struggling to believe that we have seen a racial voting realignment, the likes of which we've seen only a couple times in the United States around the civil rights era and around the Civil War, for example. There are some polls, and this now is not consistent among all polls. There are some polls which are seemingly showing that Black and Hispanic voters are showing up and supporting Trump in numbers that I am struggling to believe. Now, if indeed that happens, then Joe Biden deserves to lose. And what I mean by that is, if indeed Black and Hispanic voters end up showing up for Trump in the numbers that some polls are showing, it will be one of the great racial realignments of the United States in American history. And it's sort of like, if that's the case, then Biden's just going to lose. But those numbers in some of the polls, I really struggle to believe. I'm not exactly sure where those numbers are coming from, to be totally frank. But that would be extraordinarily surprising. So the takeaway here is this is probably going to be close and depend on just a few states. This is going to be a situation where Trump genuinely could defeat Joe Biden, although I still continue to rely on the big picture that when the economy is pretty good, and it's pretty good right now, when Trump already lost in 2020, and I struggle to think of who is going to come out for Trump in 24 that didn't in 2020. When you look at all of that big picture information, I still think that Joe Biden has a large systemic advantage here. Now, if tons of people think Biden's too old, as some polling suggests, and almost as many people think Trump is also too old, that throws a monkey wrench into it that could be difficult to interpret. It is an unprecedented set of circumstances. And also, historically, when things are roughly the way they are now, incumbents get reelected. What's the takeaway? None of it matters. We got to go out and vote. That's the takeaway. We go now to Richmond, Virginia, and we go to a place where I don't even know how to say this. Trump silenced the crowd by again confusing Obama and Biden. Now, I know that we're supposed to believe that he does this on purpose. Trump has done this dozens of times and insists that when he says Obama, when he claims Obama's the current president, that he's using satire, comedy, or sarcasm. I challenge you to find any indication that this is a joke, that it's sarcasm, or that it is satire. This is from Trump's speech in Richmond, Virginia. And he silenced the crowd. The crowd of MAGA nuts know that he's not doing this on purpose. Take a look.
Get that war settled. It's a bad war. And Putin, you know, has so little respect for Obama that he's starting to throw around the nuclear word today. You heard that, nuclear. He's starting to talk nuclear weapons today.
The crowd is dead silent because they believed it for weeks when Trump said, whenever I get Biden wrong and say Obama, it's just me being sarcastic.
Obama.
It's just me alluding to the idea that Obama's really in charge. But this is a serious speech, as serious as a speech can be for Trump. And there is no indication, there is no indication that there would be even any reason to jokingly or satirically or sarcastically interject Obama's name right there. There is just no other explanation as opposed to Trump is that confused. He's regularly confused about who he's running against and who's president right now. Trump really struggling through this one. He called the new New York Times Siena poll a bill.
And in the Harvard-Harris bill also just came out, we're leading Crooked Joe by 6 points, which means a lot more.
That's referring to the Harvard-Harris, not New York Times. He calls it a bill. Trump saying that as a nation, we are no longer respected. I know I'm not saying it right. What I'm telling you is how Trump said it.
And perhaps most importantly, we are a nation that is no longer admired, respected, or listened to on the world stage.
We are simply not respected anymore. And then calls the United States the United Stage, which, again, what is he talking about?
Production in the United States, just as the price.
The United Stage. And then maybe most weirdly, he refers to Argentina as a guy. And obviously, I think he's thinking of the president of Argentina, but he doesn't mention that he's talking about a person. He says it's a guy.
named Argentina.
And they say, always trying to demean, well, MAGA really represents 48% of the Republican Party. No, it represents 96% and maybe 100%. We're getting rid of the Romneys of the world. We want to get Romneys and those out. But they know that we are the only ones who can stop them. We're the only ones. This is the greatest movement in the history of our country, maybe in the history of any country. Even Argentina, they went MAGA. You know Argentina, great guy.
Argentina's a great guy. You know, and by the way, don't get me started on Peru. Just such a good person.
He's a big Trump guy. He loves Trump. I love him because he loves Trump. When he called, I took his call. And anybody that loves me, I like them. But he's good. And he is... And he's a MAGA guy, but it's a slightly different form of MAGA. He is Make Argentina Great Again.
He's, of course, referring to kooky Argentinian President Javier Milei, who loves Trump, but calling Argentina a guy is just a little bit strange. So here's the takeaway. Even if Trump's brain was fine, he's a disaster on policy and ideas and authoritarianism. But this is even worse because his brain is falling apart. And especially after speaking last week to Dr. John Gartner, I mean, listen, his professional opinion seems more or less sound about what we're seeing from Joe Biden versus what we're seeing from Trump. And Trump genuinely seems confused about ideas, concepts and all of it. And if you said to me, well, David, you've got two choices. They've both got dementia, but one will put good people around himself and get a bunch of things done you agree with. The other will put sycophants around him who have authoritarian wet dreams and will turn the country into take your pick of what authoritarian nation. Obviously, if those are the choices, I go with the demented guy with the ideas that are good for the country and the good people around him. I don't believe that that's the situation we find ourselves in today. But this is getting really, really bad. Lastly, again, here is Trump trying to justify these glitches, saying that he also, when he said Nikki Haley instead of Nancy Pelosi, that also was on purpose, which is really stupid, right? I mean, why on earth would he mix that up? That doesn't make any sense.
Yes, I have to be very, very careful. We have many of them. I purposely mix up like a name like Bird Brain. You know who Bird Brain is, right, Nikki? With Nancy Pelosi, I put them in because they're interchangeable in my mind.
What?
And except
now understand why that doesn't make any sense other than the obvious. When Trump said Nikki Haley instead of Nancy Pelosi, he was talking about who was responsible for Capitol security on January 6th. Now, it happened not to be Nancy Pelosi, but Trump claims it was. In what way is Nikki Haley interchangeable with Nancy Pelosi with regard to Capitol security on January 6, 2021, when Nikki Haley was not even in any kind of elected or appointed office? That doesn't make any sense. In what way are Nikki Haley and Nancy Pelosi interchangeable when Nikki Haley is a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination and Nancy Pelosi is a Democratic member of Congress? There is no way in which they are interchangeable. So this is yet another one of these lies that Trump uses to say, I'm fine, guys, I'm fine.
I have to say, I shouldn't say this about a semi-Republican, but I think Pelosi's probably a little bit smarter, actually. It's too bad to say. But you know what? So you interchange them, and then they go out with stories. I cannot be sarcastic, so I try not to be. I just did that thing for the first time in like 2 weeks because
right.
It's a disaster. Guaranteed, the fake news, the enemy of the people, will say he could not find his way off the stage.
There you go. So bottom line here, there is absolutely no way any of this stuff is believable. Trump knows he's messing stuff up. He's covering it by talking about how everything is comedy, yet Trump has no history of being able to appropriately use, apply, or reference sarcasm, satire, or comedy. So if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you. In practical terms, he's desperate, and this is the best he's got. Let's talk about crime a little bit. Crime continues to decline. Violent crime, property crime, in blue cities, certainly. In red cities, red states, blue states. Crime is just overall down with anecdotal little blips in certain limited areas. And we've been seeing this for a long time in the United States. That story doesn't fly when you've got a Democratic president. And Nancy Mace, Republican congresswoman, appeared on Fox News. And she is saying crime is up everywhere, especially so-called blue cities meaning democratically run cities. It happens to be the case that everything she says here is completely wrong. Take a listen.
Just looking at the list of participants in that room and the cities from which they come, Philadelphia, Buffalo, Miami, Milwaukee, Chicago. I mean, Congresswoman, I don't know who he thought his audience was by standing up and touting. He said murders, rapes, aggravated assaults, robberies all dropped sharply without context or time frame. That's a brutal message to people when they're saying pretty loudly that they don't like the crime that is on the rise in their cities.
They're saying it pretty loudly, and they're seeing it loudly. I mean, we know that your last guest said that D.C., for example, had its most violent year yet inside of 20 years. Mm-hmm. That is the math. Everyone knows when you go to New York or Chicago right now or San Francisco, you go to these major blue cities, it is more violent than it ever has been. And the first thing that Joe Biden should do is stop talking about crime and start working to fix it. And, you know, to do that, number one, shut down the border. He could do that today. We hear constantly about Lake and Riley. It is a tragic situation in Georgia.
It's actually hard to keep up with all the lies here.
People are angry about it, but there are Lake and Rileys in every city and across the country. In fact, in South Carolina, not far by in the upstate of South Carolina, Maddie Hines was a four-year-old girl who was murdered by an illegal alien that Joe Biden let in after Donald Trump deported him.
So listen, there are so many false notions here. First of all is the big picture story that crime is up, crime is down. We've looked at the reports extensively. Whenever I cite them, people write to me. They go, David, those are the wrong reports. Murder rate is down. Violent crime rates are down. Property crime rates are down. It's all down overall. OK. Secondly, Nancy Mace mentions it's the blue cities where the crime is. The reality, we've looked at it. We have, as far, remember, the blue cities often have higher population, but on a population adjusted rate, the crime rate, not the number of crimes, is higher in Tulsa, in Oklahoma City, than it is in New York City. And so they're also wrong about that. And thirdly, assumed when Nancy Mace says, if you want to stop the crime, Biden should shut down the border. Remember that documented and undocumented immigrants to the United States commit crime at a lower rate than natural born American citizens. In other words, it's a silly thought experiment. But if you replaced the entire population of the United States with immigrants, either legal or illegal, the crime rate would go down because they commit crime at lower rates, not higher rates than natural born citizens. So this is all part of a story that is coming from desperation. They can't go after the economy anymore. So they go, well, the stock market's doing OK because it expects Trump to be back. And then lips are sealed on the economy. Now they go to crime, except crime is overall down. It's been trending down for a long time, and that continues to be the case. All kinds of crime in both red and blue states. OK, well, no. So we're just going to say crime is up and it's also because of immigrants. Well, immigrants can't possibly be the problem because of the statistics that we have. Doesn't matter. This is where they are because they're desperate. Some Republicans have admitted it. Remember, some Republicans have actually said, I don't have anything to run on. I don't have anything to justify my reelection. We've got to get something done. Well, they don't have anything. So this is what they're going with. Nancy Mace falling into it just like the rest of them. We have a voicemail number you can call any time of day. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. After months, years of hibernation, the San Antonio troll has resurfaced, and he has resurfaced to attack me for my take about Aaron Bushnell, who burned himself to death, except I never said any of what the San Antonio troll alleges. The San Antonio troll is notorious for calling in and attacking me for things I never said. Listen to this.
Pac-Man, you are a piece of work.
Really?
I can't believe you, with your 2 million subs, are encouraging people. And let me just say, with this whole Aaron Bushnell thing.
Yeah.
Never in a billion years would you give the same charitability to the right with the, oh, I don't encourage this, but what he did was really brave.
I never said that once. This is not a show that looked at the tragic self-immolation of Aaron Bushnell, particularly contextualized by internet activity that signals severe mental illness, and said he's that's not this show. You must have heard some other show.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. If you do it, you'll be a hero. Wink, wink. What the-
Nothing I said. Certainly not this show, my friend.
I'll do it. I'm not. You would never give that thing to. I wish somebody on the right would do this one time. Just so your reaction and the pearl clutching, you'd beat anybody who would say, well, what they did was pretty extreme. And, you know, they could have the most benign take and you'd be like, they're encouraging violence.
I didn't say one thing like what this caller is talking about. Not a single thing. And this is how this nonsense gets around, because people like the San Antonio troll, they are like a virus spreading throughout the comments of the internet on other people's videos. And they go, oh, well, David Pakman said Aaron Bushnell is a hero for burning himself alive. Find the clip. Never in a million years is that something that you would hear on my show. And you didn't hear it. You didn't hear it. On the bonus show today, very special bonus show today, I'm heading to D.C. this week. And I'm not going to say anything more. I'll tell you what's going on the bonus show. We have something incredible happening this week that I am stunned. I wake up in the morning and I go, is this really happening this week? Yes, it is. Okay. So I'll tell you what the plan is for this week on the bonus show. We're going to talk about scientists weighing in on the binary nature of sex. It's a very interesting new report. I'll tell you what Pat's up to this week. So much going on the bonus show. How do you get access to the bonus show? It's very simple. You go to joinpacman.com and you sign up.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money.
Yeah.
Everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Sign up for the bonus show. You'll get instant access. You'll hear about what we're up to this week. And you can always use the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24, which saves you 40, 50% off the cost of a membership. I'll see you then. I'll be back with you tomorrow as well. We start today with the good little Supreme Court. They're really being a good little Supreme Court for Donald Trump, aren't they? The Supreme Court is serving Trump, announcing that they will take up his claim of presidential immunity, which bolsters and confirms Trump's delay strategy, as this will push one criminal trial out further. The New York Times reports, in taking up Trump's immunity claim, Supreme Court bolstered his delay strategy by scheduling a hearing for late April on the former president's assertion that he cannot be prosecuted for his actions in office. The justices increased the chance that he will not face trial by election day. This was Trump's strategy. And by gosh, those three Supreme Court justices that Trump nominated are going to help him out. The Supreme Court that former President Donald J. Trump helped to shape, writes Alan Foyer, tossed him a legal lifeline last night, making a choice that substantially aided his efforts to delay his federal trial on charges plotting to overturn the 2020 election. By deciding to take up Trump's claim that presidents enjoy almost total immunity from prosecution from any action while in office, the justices bought the former president at least several months before a trial on the election interference charges can start. This is what we feared, and it is happening. There's an article in Salon by Thomas Mukasher, which says with the January 6th case, the Supreme Court could take America down the dark road to dictatorship. And there are two elements to this. There's the timing element, which by taking up a hearing on this issue in late April, they functionally and practically delay this trial from starting. If the finding is Trump's immune for everything he did while he was president, it also further generates a precedent which could be used to enshrine dictatorial authoritarian presidencies in the United States. Now, there is another practical idea that is being floated, which makes a lot of sense to me about this, which is the Supreme Court has justices there now, Thomas, Alito, who could be interested in retiring in the next few years. They would like to retire with a Republican president in office rather than a Democrat so that their replacements will maintain a right wing court. As such, they are acting in a way to help Trump get elected. The idea being they are going to delay the criminal trial because they have seen the polling that a conviction hurts Trump in the election. By delaying the trial, maybe they help Trump get elected, which ultimately leads to their being able to retire, knowing that their replacements will be on the right. Here is Judge Luttig on MSNBC saying this is a big deal. The Supreme Court doesn't have to hear this. They're choosing to do this.
The state Supreme Court will hear Trump's immunity case.
Well, thank you for having me with you this afternoon, Nicole. I'm just hearing this moment.
I just heard it in my ears through the...
Look, this is a momentous decision just to hear this case. There was no reason in this world for the Supreme Court to take this case. The three-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia had written a masterful opinion denying that the president's claims of absolute immunity. Under the Constitution and the laws of the United States, there's never been an argument that a former president is immune from prosecution for crimes that he committed while in office. On the more practical level, of course, the Supreme Court is capable of deciding this very quickly in time that the former president could be tried before the election.
Right.
But today's decision makes that much more unlikely.
Just explain that fork in the road. If they had refused to hear it, the appeals court ruling would have held, and the trial, Judge Tanya Chutkan could have scheduled her trial.
Correct.
Yes. And that's...
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCD Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The armed gangs forced us to leave our homes. They destroyed our houses, and we're on the streets.
Haiti's under a state of emergency. Thousands of Haitians are fleeing rising gang violence. We'll go to the capital, Port-au-Prince, for an update, and to Nairobi to speak with a Kenyan lawmaker who opposes sending 1,000 Kenyan police to Haiti as part of a UN peacekeeping force. Then federal prosecutors in New York rest their case against former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, accused of turning the Central American country into a narco state. We'll get the latest. And we speak with the producer of the Oscar-nominated Holocaust film Zone of Interest, who raised Israel's assault on Gaza in his BAFTA Award acceptance speech last month.
Those walls aren't new from before or during or since the Holocaust, and it seems stark right now that we should care about innocent people being killed in Gaza or Yemen in the same way we think about innocent people being killed in Mariupol or in Israel.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled Monday states do not have the authority to remove Donald Trump from the ballot under the Insurrection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which was written to prevent Civil War Confederates from returning to government. The court's ruling came after the state of Colorado attempted to take Trump off the primary ballot over his actions inciting the January 6th insurrection. In the majority opinion, justices wrote, quote, states have no power under the Constitution to enforce Section 3 with respect to federal offices, especially the presidency. The court's three liberal justices issued a concurring opinion warning the majority ruling, quote, attempts to insulate all alleged insurrectionists from future challenges to their holding federal office. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold responded to the court's ruling on MSNBC.
My larger reaction is disappointment. I do believe that states should be able under our Constitution to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists.
Millions of voters are heading to the polls today as 15 states are holding primaries and caucuses in what's known as Super Tuesday. In California, there's a four-way race to fill the seat of the late Senator Dianne Feinstein. Three Democratic Congress members, Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, and Barbara Lee, are on the ballot, along with Republican Steve Garvey, a former Major League Baseball player. The top two candidates, regardless of party, will face off in November. In Minnesota, some Democratic activists are urging voters to select uncommitted on the ballot to protest Joe Biden's support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Jelani Hussein is co-chair of the Abandon Biden campaign.
For Tuesday, it's not Minnesota Muslims. It's not the Muslims in the United States. It's really the overwhelming majority of Democrats who believe that the president is on a very dark course. So many children have been killed in Gaza, over 30,000 dead. Every single day, the Israeli Defense Force is killing innocent people. And our president has stayed silent, has not done anything. In fact, we have done the opposite. We have stopped the world from calling and stopping this war and calling for an immediate ceasefire.
The World Health Organization is warning malnutrition in northern Gaza is, quote, particularly extreme as talks continue over a possible six-week temporary ceasefire. On Monday, Palestinian UN Ambassador Riyad Mansour warned children in Gaza are increasingly dying of starvation. He raised the case of Yazan al-Kafarna, an emaciated 10-year-old Palestinian child who died of severe malnutrition and insufficient health care.